Hi, everyone. Can you hear me? Welcome to the Extreme Youth session here at the Texas Women's Conference. I'm Pam LeBlanc. I'm a reporter at the Austin American Statesman, where I cover fitness and adventure travel. So I'm super excited to be here to introduce you to Sarah Rob O'Hagan, I'm sorry. She's the CEO of Flywheel Fitness, and she has a really interesting background if you've read in your booklets. She's from New Zealand, I just learned this now, where she's an avid outdoors woman. She snow skis, she backpacks, she hikes, she camps, she does it all. And so I am really excited to hear her speak because I'm in the throes of what I'm calling my year of adventure here in Austin. And I'm trying to challenge myself by doing different things every day or every month and writing about it for the paper. And that's included everything from running a naked 5K to jumping off a 10-meter platform. So I'm excited to hear what Sarah has to say for us today. And please join me in welcoming Sarah Rob O'Hagan. Thank you.
Now that's extreme. Good morning. Naked 5Ks, that's extreme. Who's up for that? Can you guys hear me okay? Okay, this is a giant room down the back. Can you hear? Yes, look at those waving. Okay, so at the end of today's talk, I've really carved out time for Q&A, so I want you to think about that because I really want to hear your questions and have some fun chit-chatting together. But listen, I always like to start my talks with who's the crazy lady, where's the accent from? I am from New Zealand. Has anyone been? Woo! I love that. It's awesome. It is the most beautiful country in the world. Obviously, I am biased, but that's the way I would think about it. So you'd say, why would you want to leave this beautiful country? Well, there's a lot of sheep. There's 50 million sheep and 5 million people. Okay, so let's just go there. Like, imagine building your career and this is what the landscape looks like. So it's kind of like, I got to do more than just be with the sheep. But New Zealand is actually really passionate about sport. I know us Americans love our sport. I'm now an American, by the way. Houston Astros. I got it. I'm with the home team today. So we in America, we love our sports. But listen, my little Kiwis, remember I said we have 5 million people. In 1984 at the LA Olympics, does anyone remember that? Yes, there's a few oldies in the room. Like, be proud. We were there. We saw it. We won the most medals we've ever won in the history of our country. That was 12. You guys, 12. It's huge. 12. Thank you. We were number one on the per capita medals table chart globally. That's how we think about it. But what's the most interesting is every medal that we won was a sport that involved sitting down. Look at the pictures, you guys. I'm not even making it up. Cycling, rowing, kayaking, horse riding, sailing. I'm not making this up. Is that not the funniest thing ever? So I share this story. It is funny, but actually because I do think it's a great insight, and I've been incredibly lucky over the last 25 years to build my career through some of the world's most incredible brands that have sustained and been amazing and leaders since the last 50 years. And what do they all have in common? It takes extreme focus to achieve extraordinary results on an ongoing basis. Just like the little Kiwis, extremely focused on being good at sitting down, all of these great companies have done the same thing in their own way of understanding what is it that they're extremely good at that nobody else is and not getting distracted, okay? So that's how I think about it from the business standpoint. And to be extreme you is what I call to operate at the edge of your potential. So this book I've just written called Extreme You, I spent 3 or 4 years really studying what does it take for the world's best, most successful people to keep doing it for years in and years out. And I went on this like little journey of interviewing some of the most highly accomplished people that I'd ever come across, many of which I deeply looked up to. So people like Condoleezza Rice, badass, let's just go there. Bodie Miller, the downhill skier. Sam Cass, the White House chef. Angela Ahrendts from Apple, love her. Point is, they were all in totally different walks of life, and I was trying to understand, how have you consistently stayed at the top of your game? And just like the brands and businesses I showed you, there was a real commonality. It was this idea of understanding what is it that you are uniquely amazing at that you stick to, but you keep disrupting yourself to get better and better at it. And that is what I call being extreme you. Does that make sense? So does everyone in this room believe that they can be extreme you? I think so. So let's go on a journey and understand how we do that. So being extreme you actually starts with you, the person, obviously, like understanding for you individually, what is it that blows your hair back when you get up every day that you want to go do? What are your unique skills and passions? And really go deep into those and understand your amazing weaknesses, where you suck. That's one of the most important things to know. And then how do you operate within teams? Because I believe the best teams in organizations in the workplace are usually made up of extremers. Like some people are really good at one thing, really good at others, and together they make a really good complement. And of course, the extreme organization like Flywheel. Does anyone ride at Flywheel? Put your hands up. Yes! I like you. We're at the Domain, you guys, in Austin, Texas. We're so proud to be here. But we are the kind of organization, I'll show you later, that is extreme because we focus very clearly on one thing, but we have a ton of diverse skills getting us there. Okay, so I'm going to take you through four practical lessons that I learned from this experience of how extreme people stay there, and hopefully they will make some sense to you guys. Okay, so the first one is what I like to call checking yourself out. Do you guys want to do that? Doesn't that sound like fun? Yes. Checking yourself out. So what does that mean? I'll start with a really fun personal story. So when I was a kid, I really wanted to be a champion of something. Okay, so I start with the fact I was obsessed with Tina Turner. Who loved Tina? Come on. We love her. I was like, if she can fill stadiums, I can fill stadiums. Don't you think? Like, why not, right? Only problem is I never, ever got picked for a solo in the school choir. That was clearly not working. I wanted to be a professional athlete. The closest I got was this woman here, Annalisa Koberger. I went to primary school with her. She won an Olympic downhill medal. That's the best I got. Like, I hung out with someone who did it. It wasn't me. I never made the A team. To this day, have never won a trophy. So then I was like, I'm going to be amazing on the stage. It's got to happen. So I auditioned for a high school production of Grease. You guys, how many of you did Grease? Come on. And I didn't even make the Pink Ladies. I was like, you know the section of like the chorus that is up the front, they're not even allowed on the stage? Yeah, that was me. So why do I share these mortifying stories is I actually discovered when I was writing my book that I am not alone. And all of these amazing people that I had the great honor of talking to shared very similar stories to me. They were like, I actually didn't know. Condoleezza Rice was like, I didn't know I was going to be the Secretary of State. She's like, I was a failed piano major. Who would have thought? Angela Ahrens, I was a rock solid B student. You know, you hear these stories over and over again. And one of the things I found so delightful about writing this book is many of them didn't actually figure out who they were going to be until well into their 30s, even early 40s. It's never too late, right? Never too late. Sage Steele, she's one of the anchors on ESPN, almost got kicked out of college. I mean, I can keep going. All of these people share the story of failures that helped them discover who they were going to be in the long term. And I do believe that the system we all grow up in is actually designed to make us fit in. So go back to high school. All of you went through it, I'm sure, similar experiences to me. You were either a jock, or you were into band, or you were really super smart. Like, we put people into categories very early. Do you guys agree with me on that? And it's funny, like, had I been Serena Williams, that would have been amazing. Like, if I was good at one very narrow thing, but very few of us are. Very few of us are. Yet the system tries to rank us in these very narrow categories. So how do you actually bust out of that system and understand how to create your own playing field? Because that's actually what I learned from most of these successful people that I studied. You are at your best when you play your own game. So go back and look at your own life experiences, where you were amazing, where you sucked, what you loved, what you hated, and you'll start to find that if you put a little picture together of the things where you really thrive, that is your extreme pattern. For me, as we know, I am passionate about music, but sucked at it. Passionate about sports, sucked at it. And I also started my career in airlines, and the headhunters were like, oh, you must be really into jet fuel, you know? No. Actually, I was adventurous. And what's actually become very clear to me now is my career, where I've thrived, is in the sports industry, doing creativity, innovation, new thinking. It all comes together, right, when you put those three things together. Does that make sense to you? So think for yourselves, those experiences that you really loved, and also maybe there were things where it didn't go so well, but there's a nugget of it that you can hold on to create your little extreme recipe. And that is what I call checking yourself out. Don't ever, ever not take the opportunity to try something if it can help you learn something about yourself and where your great skills are. Are you cool with that? You guys have gone so quiet. We will do aerobics if we get too quiet in here. It's scaring me a little bit. Okay. So rule number two, after you've checked yourself out and you're starting to get a sense of where you're really awesome, is to make failure your fuel. Who loves failing? Hands up. Okay, by the end of today, I want all of those hands to go up, because I love failing. That's my favorite thing. I never knew that would be my big calling card in life, is that I fail really well. at any rate, I will share a personal story. So I, 6 or 8 years into my career, so I'm in my 20s, I'm working for Virgin Atlantic Airways. This is in the 90s, Richard Branson's airline. You guys familiar with that? And I thought I was amazing, because here I am, partying with Richard Branson at the Cannes Film Festival. Is that not amazing? You guys, we came from the sheep. Let's just go there. So I thought I was pretty much on fire, unstoppable, amazing. There was nothing that I could possibly do wrong. And I got promoted, actually, to move from the airline to the music division, Virgin Megastores. Do you guys remember we used to buy music on these things that went round and round in circles? Yeah. So I joined Virgin Megastores the year that Napster came along. Yeah, I'm really good at making bad career decisions. We'll get to that in a second. But so what happened was, I'm joining this company at a time when the whole music industry is in disarray. I know nothing about music retail, zero. Yet I'm so friggin' full of myself, because I've just been hanging with Richard, so I can do no wrong, right? You know where the story's going, you do. So about a year in, I come into the office and I get that call from my boss, and I walk around and I see HR sitting in there. Yeah, you know where this is going. Are you getting sweaty right now? Feeling it? Yeah. Here's how it goes down. So I got fired, not like a layoff, one person got fired, and that was me. I got 1 week of severance, a one-way ticket back to New Zealand. In other words, we really don't want you in our company or our country. That's how bad you are. I lost my green card application, my visa. I basically nearly got deported. I mean, it was bad. And I'm 26 years old, right? And I'm sitting there going, here I was thinking I had this all. Now I basically suck. And the reason that I share this story is because you'd think, oh, good, one little failure. How bad can it be? So I end up desperately trying to figure out how to stay in the country and start working for a company called Atari. Most of my workmates look like that. And I was single. We were working in Santa Monica, California, and I have to tell you, here was Energizer Bunny Sarah coming in, and everyone's at lunchtime, the whole office would go silent because they'd all be playing this giant video game together. And I'd be like, dude, it's Santa Monica. How are we not outside on the beach? What is wrong with you people? I had nothing in common with anything or anyone at Atari. 2 years later, guess what happens? I got laid off. At least I wasn't fired. At least there was a few of us. Maybe there were three. It was a little bit better odds. Anyway, so now we're 3 years into my 20s, late 20s. This is the moment in most of our careers where you've really got to get yourself going, right? I now fondly call it my canyon of career despair, and I share it because actually it is exactly those experiences that helped me go on and become more successful later on. After Atari, by some incredible miracle, I got hired by Nike, which was a company I dreamed of working for. I interviewed for 9 months to get that job. Giant pay cut, giant title cut. I didn't care. I was just like, please don't fire me. Please don't fire me. Please don't fire me. And here's what I would say is here's the loser girl that goes from like totally bombing out to a new environment, which was all about sports, all about teamwork, all about the stuff I just love. And suddenly that same loser girl suddenly starts to do really, really well. And there's a lesson in this, because if you experience those extreme environments, you'll start to see where you shine. Have you guys had that experience? Where some day, yes, someone said, yes, I have. Some days, like, you get fired or you get laid off or things don't go well and you take it so damn personally, stop. Like, recognize what you can learn from that experience and then figure out how to keep experiencing the environments where you can shine. While I was at Nike was when I got to meet Bodie Miller. Do you guys know who Bodie is? He's a fucking badass. I'm just gonna go there. He is the most decorated American downhill skier of all time. And he taught me so much about failure. So he talked about when he was a kid and he was learning to become a skier in rural New Hampshire. And he was physically smaller than the other guys that he was skiing against. And he kept coming in like 50th. You know, coming 50th isn't going to get you to the Olympics. I think we can all agree with that, right? And so he starts to realize that if I just listen to what I'm being told by the trainers and coaches, I'm only incrementally improving. It's not getting me anywhere. I got to figure out how to do this differently. So he decides in his own head, I'm going to go balls to the wall. Let's go. Every single ski race, he would ski so hard that he would constantly be crashing. As he joked, it's like the crashing's fine. As long as you don't hit trees, you're kind of okay. But the point is that because he kept pushing himself like that, he was actually pushing himself beyond his own boundaries and growing new muscles, growing new strength, so that on race day, when everyone else finally goes to the end of the extreme and they start falling, he's actually taught himself how to get out of a fall and actually be able to keep going and push to a faster level. Now, interestingly, what I love about Bodie, because we sponsored him, so I spent many, many days going up, like hiking up hills to watch him ski. There was always like, he will come and get the gold medal or he will crash. There was no in between, like, to be clear. But what he did teach me was this idea of crashing more. Don't be scared of failure, crash more. Because the more you do it, even though it hurts, even though you're getting bruised and bumped around, you're actually developing more strength in the process of doing it. Does that make sense to you? Okay, so that's lesson two, is make failure your fuel. Lesson number three, so if you've checked yourself out and you kind of know a little bit about who you are and you're super cool with failing, are we good with failing now? Are those hands going to go up now? Yes, that's good. It's about 20%. All right, we're getting somewhere. Now we need to focus on playing our specialist game. And what I mean by that is really understanding who you are and what you do uniquely and getting the world to be on your little playing field. So I came upon this idea actually by studying brands and businesses and then applying what they do to how we can act as leaders in the world. And it's quite interesting. So I'm going to bring it to life through a couple of examples. Hands up in this room right now who is passionately into United Airlines. Awesome. Okay. Stand up. There's always one. There's always one. I love it. Now, what I'm going to say is I actually think you might have frequent flyer Stockholm syndrome. Could I be right? Right. You can say it. There's always one. I love it. There's always one. Okay, meantime, anyone flown Virgin America? Anyone love Virgin America? Yes. Okay. What's the difference? And I picked on United. I could have picked on all manner of airlines around the world, by the way. The difference is United's target consumer is human beings with arms and legs. Okay? That's who they go after. Anyone who will fly. Virgin, when they created the airline, positioned themselves in a very specialist way. They said, we want to appeal to those who are on the coasts, those who are in the fashion, technology, entertainment space. We're going to build our route structure. We're going to build our service offering around them. And by the way, when the other people who are not into that reject us, we don't care. We're okay with that. And as a result, what, 30 years later, since certainly Virgin Atlantic started, they're still one of the most profitable airlines out there. My other favorite example is the dry bar. Ladies, how many of you have been to the dry bar? Is there one in Texas? Yes? In Austin? the dry bar, all the men in here right now, and by the way, give it up for the men. I love the dudes that are here. Love you. Every man in this room right now is WTF, WTF, what is dry bar? So here's the thing. Dry bar is a blowout salon for women. And it was started by Ali Webb about 7 years ago. I interviewed her in my book. And she was someone who had done a lot of hairdressing as a child. That was one of her specialties. And she also had unruly hair. That was another one of her specialties. And she grew up with parents that owned a sporting goods store. And they were really into sort of how do you create a sporting goods store experience with real hospitality. And that was another one of her specialties. So she decides she wants to open a store where you just blow out your hair. Not cut, not color, just blow out your hair. And she pitches this to her brother, who's the financier in the family, who's bald. He's like, this is the baddest idea ever. Why would you do that? Because you're missing out on the revenue opportunity from cuts and colors and everything else. And she's like, because I want to be the best in the world at blowing out hair. And women don't even know how great a blowout can be. No one's even showed them what it can be. And I'm going to create this amazing hospitality experience around it. How many people have been to the dry bar? Has she succeeded? I would say yes. And here's the thing. She has created a category around that specialty. She has created the category that never existed. It's now well over a $100 million business, and she's absolutely crushing it out there. And you know what? The investors keep saying, well, why don't you, add the nail salon? And she's like, stop, because if I do that, I won't be the best at this one thing. Is this coming true for you guys? Is it coming clear? So I believe that the stronger your foundation, the bolder you will be. So just like those business examples, apply them to you, the leader, right? If you're trying to, run for office or get picked for a job or get funding as a startup, if you have a really strong foundation and you're willing to not be a bunch of things and just stick with what you're amazing at, you will be so much more confident. You will take greater risks. You will be more confident in your offering. Just like Ali had to get all these guys that had no idea what she was talking about, but she knew it was right because she had the specialist knowledge and ability. And when you know that foundation, when opportunity knocks, bust down the door. All of us have had moments in our life when job opportunities come along and you're like, well, it just doesn't fit today because where I'm at in my life. But if it fits your specialist game, you have to go for it because that's the opportunity that you'll really be able to thrive in. And I'm going to bring this to life with an example of myself. I joined Flywheel, which is an indoor cycling company, just over a year ago, at a time when I had quit my job to go full-time being an author and I had no desire to get a job, right? None. And along comes this opportunity, and here's why I took it. So the fitness industry, how many people work out in the room? Yay, look at you, I love that. Although, can I just say, Austin's very sweaty. Like, I was running this morning. The bad hair day is because of Austin being sweaty. I just want to go there. But so the fitness industry is moving from one size fits all to specialist categories. So in the last like 5 to 10 years, gyms where you go to do personal training and group fitness and machines have really been on the decline, and boutique fitness is exploding. Boutique fitness is where you go just to a cycling studio or a running studio or a yoga studio. Do many of you go to boutique fitness in this room? I would guess a lot. Yeah, it's really exploding. And so the whole industry is moving that way. And you may say to me, so cycling is a specialist category. And I'm going to show you that even within that specialty, you have to go even more specialized. So how do I know that? Why we work out informs where we work out. I love this chart because every one of you in this room fits on it. This is the US population, age 18 to 64, maybe a few younger or older than that, but and your mental attitude to exercise and fitness. So 30% of the population do not work out at all, never will. That's who they are, rock it out. 18% are what we call chore exercisers who absolutely hate it. But they're doing it because the doctor said you really have to, and they make themselves get out there every day, and they're amazing warriors the way they do. 12% are physical laborers, so they don't have to go to the gym because their job is physical. And then we get into probably many people in this room. 7% are social exercisers. You know who you are. You go to work out because you want to hang out with people, right? You love going with girlfriends. You know the instructors. You expect everyone at the front desk to high-five you and know your name. You know who you are, right? Raise your hand. Raise your hand. We love you. Okay, 12% of what we call routine exercises, I think a lot of you will be this, who exercise isn't necessarily your lifestyle, but you know you want to get it done as efficiently as you can. And if I said to you that today's workout could be 60% more efficient and 20% of the time, you would take it immediately, right? You just want to do it as fast as you possibly can. And then we have my two favorite groups, the passionate athlete and the competitive athlete. Passionates work out 6 days a week. They cannot exist without working out. They get super grumpy. You know who you are. Yep, there's one right there. Did you work out today? You did, didn't you? Yes. And they're very much involved in trying to improve their own personal performance. Like, whatever I did in terms of my yoga pose today, I want to make it better tomorrow. Very, very driven by goals. And then we have the competitive athletes. Hands up who can't let the kids win at Monopoly. Hands up who goes to a gym and they're on the treadmill and the person next to them is running and they know how fast they are and they have to be faster. You know who you are. All right, so competitive athletes, actually, I love, I am one. I could join Competitors Anonymous. These people typically played sports in high school and they get really excited by an opportunity to be competitive. It's very much in their wiring. Everything they do, type A personalities, they always have to beat the next person, right? Constantly thinking about it. This gentleman here is smiling. You are one, I can tell. I can just tell. All right, so that is the US population. Now look at my business of cyclists. 70% of our riders are those two segments down the end. Isn't that amazing? And do you want to know why? Are you ready for this? At Flywheel, which is indoor cycling, has anyone been spinning in the room? And remember back in the day when you'd be in a dark room and the instructor would say, turn up the resistance, and you'd be like, yeah, kinda. At Flywheel, we were the first company to put technology on the bike. So the instructor would say, I want you to hit this number, and you gotta hit this output. So there was like totally takes all of the mystery out of it. And for my competitive friend, wait for this, we have at the front of the room what we call talk boards, where you can see if you are beating the other people in the room. As a result, all of the competitive athletes are like, this is amazing. This is exactly what they're into, right? And they come to us like bees to a honeypot. And if you don't know your specialist game, in our case, we are going squarely after those people, consumers can mislead you. So, you know, if you look at some of our feedback surveys, you'll get things like, I'm not going to come to Flywheel because it's too intimidating. And if I got stressed out and worried about that, I would end up dumbing down what is really relevant to that little specialist group of consumers that I'm appealing to right now. And by the way, because I am a competitive athlete, I've been through all the therapy to be able to admit it now, I know intuitively how to make decisions against things that look like they could be misleading. Does that make sense to you guys? That's when my specialist game links to the company's specialist game. And this is how we talk at Flywheel, this idea of never coasting, which is so inspiring to me. I feel like I have finally found my tribe in life. Does that make sense to you guys? Think about what it is you do and find that organization or that challenge that can bring it to life for you. Okay, last lesson of the day, and then start thinking about your questions. And if none of you ask questions, I'll see you're incredibly unextreme. So be ready, okay? Bring out the extreme in others. And this is probably what I'm most passionate about that all of us in this room have to do. You came here today because you are a leader and you aspire to have impact. So how do you do that? Bring out the extreme, the great skills that others have to help them be the best they can be. So how do you do that? Start by partnering with those least like you. How great is this picture? Isn't that amazing? These are all like top of the game, world-class athletes, and look how different their bodies are. And it just shows you that we can be so very different in how we look, feel, express ourselves, and we are all so amazing and have such potential within us. So partnering with those least like you means when you go to work every day, don't keep having lunch with the same people. You know, find the people that probably are a little bit uncomfortable to you. As you can tell, I'm an incredible introvert. I'm a giant extrovert, like to the point where it's very overwhelming to people. But I have done the best work in my life when I partner with an introvert. I love introverts because they help to slow me down. They help to make me more thoughtful. They help to make me think about the deep actions of what I'm doing. I'm also very left and right brain. Some people are left brain, very analytical. Go find those creative people. Or if you're very creative, where are the finance people that can help you be balanced, right? Does this make sense to you? Like, go find those people that can bring out the other skills that you don't have. And then narrow your focus as what you're trying to do, but diversify your team. This is like one of my favorite stories of all time. I read this in a business magazine about 5 years ago. So you guys remember Legos. We all played with them as kids. Legos, I think you say in this country. I say in this country. So they realized about 5 years ago that their entire history, they had only ever sold to little boys. 80% of their product was sold to little boys. How many people have boys that play a little Lego? I do. And they were like, well, that's silly. How can we understand how to appeal to little girls? And so they do these deep ethnographic studies of small children to understand how they play. And here's what they heard from the girls. Are you ready? Yeah, those people with little faces are ugly.
Let's be real, they are.
I don't see how I would not hang out with them. Like, why would I play with them, right? Is that not, like, are you laughing right now? We are so like that. They also said what was interesting is the little boys love Lego because it's very linear. You know, you start with a bunch of bricks and a map, and you follow it, and you focus, focus, focus. You get something done, and you have something awesome to show your parents at the end. Little girls, however, like to multitask. And they're sitting there going, well, this is a bit boring because I like want to build this bit. Now I want to come over here and do this bit. Now I want to go, right? Are you smiling right now? I'm reading this article going, this is us when we grow up. Am I right? We have very different wiring, men and women. And that's just one example of diversity. But it is so important to recognize that you need both sides. I think the best teams in the world are the ones that have those very, very different skills that help balance each other to create great teamwork. And then lastly, because you are all leaders, think about the world that you're in as talent management. Everything you are doing is how am I finding the best people out there? How am I signing them to my team? And how am I keeping them energized and really like allowing them to develop their extreme potential so they want to do more with me? Because if I can do that, then I'm going to have greater success for my team. And with that, are you guys still awake? Yes. We went through four lessons of being extreme you. Did you guys check them out? Check yourself out. Make failure your fuel, playing your specialist game and bringing out the extreme in others. Now hands up how many people like failing. Woo! We've made big progress today. All right, so with that, I am going to take some questions. I'm not sure how many minutes we have. What's that? Sure, come on up. Let's do it. So don't be shy now. You guys, don't be shy. This is a big room.
We have a microphone right over here. So anyone, and right here as well. So anyone who has a question to ask Sarah, file right up.
Wow, otherwise it's going to be push-ups for this whole room. So get on it, come on. Who's it going to be? Come on. Oh, here's one.
Yay.
Yes. And she's the passionate athlete. I love it.
All right. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, thank you so much. This has been amazing and energizing. I'm also an extreme extrovert like you. My question is, how do you go from a couple of, you know, challenging setbacks in career and then going to actually build a business? Probably it's a lot of self-doubt to overcome, maybe not. Anything that you can share along those lines?
Yeah, it's a very good question. How do you overcome the self-doubts that come with the setbacks was essentially the question. And listen, I don't think you ever 100% do. I would start there. But one thing I really learned in researching my book was that the best way to overcome self-doubt is actually just to start forward momentum in a new direction. And so for anyone who's going through something difficult, maybe you got divorced or you got fired or whatever, you do have that period of really wallowing in it, which is good. Tubs of Ben and Jerry's are awesome at that moment. But then there has to become a time where you start taking the step forward And as you take positive steps forward, as little as they may be, they start to build the self-confidence that you're moving somewhere forward, not focusing on behind. And I think that's a good technique.
Thank you. Over here this time.
Thanks for your insight. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Excellent. Thanks for your insight. So you spoke a little bit about using failure to fuel the path forward. How do you take the failure that you experience and learn from it? Seems like the skier you talked about systematically learned from his failure. How do you do that?
So it's funny, I'll use this athlete analogy for a second because I feel really lucky that I've spent my life studying these high-performance humans. And here's the thing, like when we're in day-to-day careers and we get given negative feedback, it's really painful, right? Does anyone feel that way? I hate it. Like, yet if you think about an athlete, think about Bodhi, at the end of every race, even when he's crushed it, the coach is going to tell him something that he can do to be even higher performing. And that, like, those athletes are wired, they want to hear it. So why do we not think of it that way? Why don't we, you know? And so I think it's like, how do you reframe it in your head and go and look at what just happened? And in any situation, listen, there's stuff that you did, there's stuff that the environment did, it's never all your fault. But it's like, pull out from it, like be self-reflective and say, okay, what could I have done differently? And don't stop until you pick at least one thing, you know? And then write it down, keep it with you, and be very mindful of it as you go forward. And the other thing I do think is like having good mentors that you can openly ask, like, am I sticking to it? And am I getting it right?
Thank you.
Over here.
I know the concept here is extreme. Most of us operate more in the middle in our day-to-day life, and we haven't perhaps had spectacular failures. We've had, we're kind of more in the middle doing our everyday life. And so as part of identifying what we're uniquely good at and our passion, any more detail or concrete information you want to share there?
I'm glad you brought that up too, because I joke, one of my very, very best friends has had this amazing career that's just done this. And I'm like, yours looks so much more fun. Like, you know, easier, do it that way. So you don't have to be like living the extremes to get the learnings. But what I would say is, you know, I think we all know intuitively in our gut when we're in a role and we're just feeling like we got it, like confident and amazing. And like, look back over your career and think about those moments. Where were you? It might not have been a career role. It might have been volunteering. It might have been something, organizing a family reunion. I don't know. But those moments when you felt that you were so confident and others were looking to you. So first of all, package those up. And then look at the ones where you're like, I was so not me. I wasn't confident. I wasn't bringing myself to it because of whatever reason. And start to pull them apart and see, what do you learn from that? And then that's when I think you can start to pull out, well, even in these bad situations over here, there might have been something about it you were good at, but it was the environment that stopped, you know, and like pull that out as well and then put it into your little kitchen mix and away you go, right?
Thank you.
Over here.
Her question was actually very similar to what I was originally going to ask. So as a follow-on to that, you know, once you have identified maybe the one area that you're very passionate about, but what if it's something that, you know, is totally not even remotely related to what you're doing right now and you have no idea where to start? Like, how do you even start to get there?
So there's a wonderful story in my book about a woman called Amrita Sen who did that. She went through her whole career, you know, amazing educational credentials. She was a consultant. She was doing all this amazing work, and she was miserable. And then at around 35, was almost like falling into quite deep depression because deep down inside, she wanted to be a singer and always had done. And it's a beautiful story of how she went back and said, I'm going to start from the beginning and start training my voice again. And you guys, I'm getting chills. She ends up singing at the Oscars when Slumdog Millionaire was that year because they were looking for people with her. I'm getting chills, tell you. But she then went on to realize, like, she wanted to turn it into how it could become art in a more broad way and had to go and start, like, going on to lynda.com to teach herself. My point in all of this is it's never too late. ever. And what you'll be surprised about is the skills that you already have are going to come in handy in a way you may not know. It's just like finding how do you begin that new journey, for sure.
Thank you.
Yes.
Oh, hi. Sarah. So happy that you're here because I'm from Equinox.
Dude!
Yeah.
Let's go.
So I wanted to know, first and foremost, thank you for making failure seem pretty cool because a lot of us suffer from this fear of failure and feeling ashamed about it.
Yeah.
So a question I have for you is, what was your biggest failure that you endured at Equinox and how did that fuel you to where you are now?
Yeah, it's a great question. My biggest failure, I used to work for Equinox, the fitness company, if anyone is not aware of it, was that I quit. It was the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire career. Really hard. And I felt like it was a failure because I had come to achieve a certain set of things in my own mind and I couldn't get there and I had to quit. And it took me months to come to that conclusion. But here's the one thing I would say. I also have a chapter in the book called Break Yourself to Make Yourself. What I definitely learned from so many epic embarrassments at the beginning of my career is if things are not going right and you're not playing to your best, you're better to break yourself than have someone else do it to you. And I know that's hard to do, but you'd be amazed what comes out of it. Never would I have believed that I'd end up in the job that I'm in now. And suddenly all of that experience makes sense. It all comes together, but you don't know that, right? So if you are not in the right environment, if you don't feel like you're thriving, take a big step back and go, maybe I need to actually push myself out of here to find where I'm going to go next.
Over here.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
I wanted to come to this talk especially because I am a Flywheel client. I've been to the domain location, which I guess is the only one for now. But my question is about specialization and also evolution because, along with Flywheel, I'll get emails for, try Fly Bar, and now we're going to do Fly Anywhere. And so, in business and as a metaphor for career development, how do you balance specialization and adaptability and evolution?
Yeah, it's such a good question. Look at you. It's funny. I will give you an example that'll bring it to life. So I led the turnaround of Gatorade. Has anyone heard of Gatorade? Like a few of us have. Yeah, it's awesome. But I joined the company actually when it was going through a massive decline. Like this is a $5 billion business that was losing $500 million of revenue a year. It was bad. And it needed to evolve to what you're saying. Like market had shifted, consumer preferences had shifted. But what we actually realized to turn that business around is we had to go back to specializing first because when I joined, their consumer target was men 14 to 49 who have a throat. You know what I mean? And we go from that to high school female and male athletes from 13 to 17. And everyone's like, you're completely nuts. There's no way that's going to work. But because we built the foundation back for its core, suddenly everyone starts to see there's a cool factor around this brand again. And instead of just saying, we're only going to do sports drinks, we actually, you guys may remember the G series. We did these products for before, during, and after exercise. So yes, we were going outside of our core, but very much specializing back to who we were serving. And I think that's the most important thing as leaders and businesses is know that sharp target of who you're serving. And you can do tons more things for them, but don't get distracted, which is what had happened to Gatorade. Like vitamin water came along, oh, we need to get the Hollywood crowd. No, you don't. You got to focus on your specialty. And buy Fly Anywhere, by the way. We're about to launch a streaming bike. Please. I'm so impressed that you know that, which is going back to that core.
Thank you.
Over here.
So my question is, maintaining that extreme mode obviously requires a certain amount of momentum. So how do you keep that momentum going? Are there disciplines or things that you do? And is rest a factor in that?
Yeah. New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc is a big part of it. I'll start there. Yes, and no, rest is massively important. It's, believe it or not, like I'm a big subscriber to Arianna Huffington's sleep messaging. I really am. But no, I do think that you're absolutely right. Momentum is important. However, I think particularly as women, we all have to recognize like there's a cycle of life and you don't have to be all on all the time. And there are definitely moments when like macro moments where you might have, like right now, I'm in one of the most intense periods I've been in for a long time, but that's eventually gonna slow down as the business gets up to where it's gonna go, right? And you need to be cool with that and give yourself that moment. But what is interesting about momentum is like when you feel like you're bored or it's waning, you don't necessarily have to change your whole life. You can do little things to sort of spark your creativity again. Like last year when I quit my job, this is embarrassing, I went and took piano lessons with my kids. Mortifying, like mortifying. Do you know what it's like with a person sitting there when you know what I mean? But it got me out of my comfort zone in a funny little way. And I think you can do that without having to totally like, you know, set your life on fire.
Thank you.
Over here.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
I have a friend that's an instructor for Flywheel in Charlotte. So
oh,
big
I love
fan.
That. Oh, in Charlotte?
In Charlotte.
Oh, I love that. It's a great studio.
So my question, I'm a new leader of a team that's been together for years and years, and I come in looking to reinvigorate new ideas. How can I bring out the extreme in my team to get people going?
Cool question. So how do you sort of bring new ideas into a team? So first thing I would say is, I am such a believer that great teams have very deep roots. So when you come into a new business, like we've all seen the story of the new boss that like just moves everything and changes everything and brings in their people, and often that doesn't end so well. Like it's important to have a balance of like the institutional knowledge and the roots of the team, and then throw in some different diverse skill sets to help change it up, but help them be equally balanced in doing that, because often I think as the leader, if it's perceived that you're just bringing in new people, then the oldies are like, wait, what's going on? And actually you need them more than anything. And I think it's like creating exercises and experiences to help them together create new knowledge. Like it's not one or the other. It's like, how do you put them in environments where they have to come up with things for you that brings new knowledge that they create together? And it can be a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Over here.
Hi, Sarah.
Oh my God, there she is. This is Carla, everyone.
So Sarah, I'm curious, in your research and findings for your book, Extreme You, did any of it influence or impact you as a parent? And have you adapted your parenting style? What's changed?
I love that you asked that question. So yes, in a huge way. So I'll start with the fact that my kids have to return all their participation trophies. Yeah. Yes. that was actually what started this whole journey for me, to be honest, was when I saw my kids playing youth sports and they were coming home with all these trophies, and I was like, wait, what? You didn't win. Like, why are we rewarding that? And I realized that that was a big cultural shift, actually, that our country and the Western culture went through over the last 20 to 30 years, was this idea. It actually was informed by people genuinely thinking the psychology research was this empowerment culture would help people be better. And what we learned and what we now know is we didn't teach kids to fail. We didn't teach them how to be resilient and have grit, and therefore they weren't able to reach their full potential. And so for me as a parent, I'm like super hyper aware of that now. And I'm a big subscriber to all of Adam Grant's work. I hope you guys all heard him this morning, but he's really good. He has great tips for parents around really focusing on like rewarding the effort that's put in, not so much the outcome and the result, and really helping them to think about it that way and understand their own goals and what they're trying to achieve and how they got there. Great question.
Over here.
Hi, Sarah. So I am one of those competitive athletes too. I find myself always competing with those that are next to me, even though it may often result in racing against a triathlon runner. You know, it's one of those mistakes. But I also find myself being competitive with myself at work.
Good. Yeah.
How do you find that balance? How do you train your brain to be okay with failures when you're a perfectionist? But also, how do you keep from pushing yourself so far that you reach that burnout stage?
Yes.
There's that balance.
Yes, which is a very good insight, by the way, for those of us who are type A competitive athlete type people. We do run a much higher risk of burnout, and I can tell you as someone who's been almost through that at times in my life that you have to be aware that that is a very likely outcome if you're not keeping your eye on it. And I think one of the best sort of techniques to avoid that is to make sure that you pull yourself out of situations and get perspective when you know that you're getting like super hyper over jazzed about it or stressed, quite honestly. Like, we've all been in that situation, I think, where we've had a lot of stress in the workplace and you just can't get out of your own way. You're thinking about it, you're sleeping thinking about it, you're waking up thinking about it. And it's amazing how if you pull yourself away from it, go to another place for the weekend, hang out with some different friends, and you suddenly realize actually, it's not that crazy. I don't have to win that much, you know? My friend Carla, wherever she went, did exactly this for me 2 weeks ago, when you just need someone to help you frame it with new perspective, because otherwise I do think our mindsets run away a little bit.
Thank you.
Does anybody else have any questions? Yes.
One lucky last.
So I have a question with you around you talking about Equinox and coming to that decision to quit there.
Yeah.
I was definitely raised with the you don't fail. Like, it's actually better not to try than to fail, right?
Yeah.
So when you're trying for that, you're trying to make a change and you're just hit wall after wall, how do you come to that conclusion that it's you're done trying? Like, there's no more you can get and it's time to go.
It's a great question. And I think it's one that a lot of people, particularly in the sort of millennial age range right now, are really struggling with, because there's this huge phenomenon, as we all know, statistically around job hopping and not sticking out for more than a year and all this sort of stuff, which, by the way, isn't smart, because if you don't stay somewhere to have some depth, you know, you're suddenly going to come along in your career and realize you've had all these very surface experiences. So you actually do sometimes have to stick it out to make sure, like, are you dealing with it the right way? Are you approaching it the right way? However, there are also times when you may be in a very caustic environment. That happens. And I do think that's when you have to sort of turn to your mentors, support systems, frame the question, like, what do you think, given this is the scenario, what do I have to lose if I stay versus if I go? And ultimately, when that balance gets off is when you have to go, for sure. You guys are, is there one more? Oh, lucky last.
Sorry. This was kind of asked before, but I was wondering if you could maybe give some examples of successful exercises or things that you've done to inspire others or motivate others to bring out their extreme self. Maybe not necessarily for people who work under you, but it could even be a client or someone that you really want to inspire to take a risk.
Yeah. So I am a big believer in creating experiences that put people out of their day-to-day comfort zone. So anyone who has worked with me, I'm a big believer in fun offsites where, you know, we get groups together, we mix them up, and we do exercises that we wouldn't normally do. And by the way, I have gotten a lot better at, in those environments, thinking about the extroverts in the group and the introverts in the group, you know what I mean? Like, we just did one earlier this year where it was amazing. We all lay on the ground together listening to a podcast for half an hour, which was so cool because the extroverts had to shut up and it was amazing. But it's stuff like that. Or, you know, whether it's creating, you know, weekend trip ideas. Like, that's often something I'll do with friends if I see someone stuck. Like, whether it's, you know, signing up to do a 5K race together or going to do something that actually just gets them on the momentum trail again, as opposed to sort of sitting in that circle going around and around and not actually moving forward. All right, you ladies have been amazing. This has been so fun. Enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you.
Are you signing books?
No, if I'm supposed to be.
Do you have books?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Okay, Sarah has books here that she's available to sign if anyone is interested in that. Thank you, guys.